Chapter 17. Devils, Gods and Lovers. Today. The long white hearse pulled up outside 616 West 57th Street, a large Manhattan brownstone with an imposing black door. "Here we are," said Lucy, getting out of the car.
"How did you get this one? Another fiddling contest?"
Pete joked, staring up at the brownstone as Charon opened the door for him.
"Thank you, Charon. I never thought I would get the chance to travel with you."
The slight man tapped the peak of his smart new hat politely in response.
"Oh, Charon, looks like I'm going to be occupied for quite a few days. Could you be a dear and feed the dog?"
Lucy was already making his way up the stairs to the front door.
"Of course, sir," Charon replied with a small bow. "I'm sure I can fit it in between all of my other duties," he added, getting back into the car. "Don't sass me, Charon, or you'll be back using the boat," grinned Lucy. "We better get inside, Petey. You never know who's listening."
Lucy took out a large brass key from a chain around his neck. As it turned in the lock, Pete was sure he heard the sound of a large boulder being rolled away, but the door opened up like any other, revealing a tasteful atrium. A black and white tiled floor lay beneath them, some lovely French crown moulding above. Lucy closed the door behind them, typed some numbers into a small white plastic box on the wall, and hung the key on a hook by the door. He spun sharply round to his brother.
"Come on, let's get comfy. We still have so much to catch up on."
Lucy led Pete through the atrium into a well-lit corridor. Pete studied the walls, covered with shelves and hangings, which were littered with only a fraction of his brother's vast collection. A spearhead tipped with dried blood, an earthen jar with the seal broken, an autographed photo of Lucy with Thomas Edison.
I don't suppose you have the sword?" Pete asked, hopefully, studying a pair of winged sandals as they fluttered around in a glass box. "It would save our boy a lot of trouble."
"Afraid not, Petey," Lucy said, opening the door to the sitting room.
A fire blazed in the hearth, with two inflatable armchairs before it.
"I did always want to have a swing of it. Vulcan said it's the only one he ever forged, better than that flaming monstrosity that Michael wields." "Welled."
"Wielded?
Oh, who knows?"
Pete flung himself into one of the armchairs. "You want something to drink?"
"Well, I'll have a gin and tonic if you'll join me."
Pete lowered himself into the other chair with some difficulty and much squeaking.
"Capital idea. Faust!"
A bizarre-looking figure appeared at Lucy's call. He was wearing a butler's uniform, but not a proper one, the kind you might get at a fancy dress shop for Halloween. The man was old, almost impossibly old. His skin looked like the paper of a waterlogged book, the whites of his eyes a nicotine yellow.
"Sir,"
came a croak from his sunken, toothless mouth.
"Two gins and tonics, please, the good stuff."
Lucy smiled at his servant. Faust inclined his head and began to shuffle away. Lucy turned to see Pete, giving him an incredulous look.
"What?"
said Lucy defensively. They both looked at Faust, who had barely made it 3 feet away.
"Hey, Faust, would you like to die today?"
Faust, without looking back, raised a withered hand in an obscene gesture and finally left the room.
"See? He's fine. Happiest guy I know."
Lucy paused and looked fondly at his brother. "That used to be you back in the day."
"Well, thousands of years of daily torture would sour anyone's mood," said Pete curtly. "I saved you eventually, didn't I?"
"Yes, you did, with the help of Adam and the muscly nephew."
Pete stared at the fire. The only past Pete didn't enjoy looking back on was his own.
"Oh, listen, let's not do this. We buried the hatchet years ago. Now, where are those drinks? Faust, come on! We haven't got all day. We're trying to stop a holy war here."
Faust shuffled back into the room, carrying a tray on which were two large gin and tonics, each decorated with a purple cocktail umbrella. Faust made to take each of them their drink, but Pete, foreseeing this adding several painful minutes to the procedure, stood up and grabbed his quickly. Lucy followed suit. Faust looked mildly affronted before slowly shuffling away.
"I'm sorry," said Pete, taking a long sip from his drink after navigating the umbrella. "It's just I've spent so long out of the game. The last few days are opening up some old wounds."
"Oh, it's to be expected. And I respect your choice, I really do. A quiet life. I do see the appeal, although I can't say I've ever been tempted myself."
The devil downed his drink.
"Tell you what, you help me sort this out and I'll give you a cover story so good not even Heimdall could find you."
"He's still alive?" Pete raised his eyebrows.
"No, sorry. I forgot you'd missed the last rag de rock. I'm sure he'll be back soon. You can't keep a good god down."
Lucy raised himself from his inflatable chair.
"But enough chit-chat. Let's find out what makes Adam so damn important to Juno."
He twirled his cocktail umbrella with a flourish.
"To the library."
Pete stood slowly, keeping a firm grip on his gin. He sensed he was going to need it. On the other side of the country, June Friday sat on her white leather Chesterfield, furious. The news had been nothing but the cab explosion for the last hour. June watched as the CCTV footage played yet again, showing Diana's RPG barreling down a Manhattan Avenue. Keep it quiet. Had that been too much to ask? Clearly. Diana was not answering her cell, and that Wolfman assistant of hers wasn't responding either. She just needed Adam stalled for a few more months. The news reports continued. They'd begun interviewing eyewitnesses. Juno watched a young, doe-eyed woman harp on.
"It was really scary. The cab blew up just behind us. I thank God I wasn't hurt."
Something in June snapped. She picked up the Friday Fortune semi-auto Uzi from the coffee table and fired it at the TV, causing an uncharacteristic mess. Broken glass and hot metal spilled onto the pristine shag pile.
"Everything okay, Mom?" asked Amy,
her youngest daughter, watching from the foot of the stairs.
"Yes, honey, everything is fine."
"You shut the TV,"
Amy said.
"Very observant of you, darling."
June walked over to her daughter and took in her delicate features.
"You haven't left our guest unaccompanied just to tell me that."
"No, Mom. I was worried about you."
Amy looked back upstairs.
"Well, there's nothing to worry about." June smiled at her. "Mom is just a little disappointed in your sister. Now go back upstairs. Your job is the most important one of all."
"I don't..."
Amy hesitated. She looked to her mother. Her eyes focused for a second.
"I love you, Amy," June said quickly, placing a firm hand on her shoulder.
"I love you too, Mom."
Amy's vacant expression had returned. She went back upstairs without another word. June watched her go, not moving until she heard the door to the left of the landing open and close. Then she sank down on the foot of the stairs, her head in her hands. "This is all going to be worth it," she told herself. They would all be happier when it was over, happier when God was gone and she could maintain a fair and balanced universe. That's all she'd ever wanted. Order. She had tried to find it with her husband. He was her king and she his queen. They used to work so closely together. In the garden, they had stood as equals over the disobedient man and woman. They had divided the work equally. She would punish woman and he would punish man. She had wrapped her vines around Eve and stolen her away. She still remembered the look of fear and desperation in their eyes as they were separated. Neither June nor her husband had wanted to hurt them, but order and law had to be maintained. They had both been willing to make the hard decisions. But he had got soft after becoming the Lord. She knew she was making the right call. And with Amy keeping Michael placated upstairs, it was only a matter of time before a more perfect order was ordained. Her eyes flicked to the coat rack by the door. On it hung her fur, Amy's trench, and a large broadsword smoking in its scabbard. June wasn't the only former goddess keeping track of the news from New York. Her eldest daughter, Anna Friday, June's wise right hand, sat on her phone glued to social media as the sun set on the island of Delos. Messages and posts from eyes on the ground kept flowing in. Her thumb kept scrolling and her eyes kept reading.
Just seen the NYPD close off 5 blocks. This ISIS? Hashtag terrorist. Chick with the bow and arrow running through Midtown.
Hashtag fitness girls.
Fog in the park. Global warming out of control.
Hashtag Central Park. Anna had come to Delos on a hunch. She didn't want it to be right, but she so often was. She looked out at the Aegean. As a goddess, she had spent the best part of her long life flitting around this ocean. Then, as an angel, which she hadn't hated, she'd still made appearances, which were rewarding, but they'd got rarer and rarer. Truth be told, she'd missed being a goddess. But she understood her dad's logic at the time. Playing so many different roles had become challenging at best, dangerous at worst. Things had been stable for the vast majority of the last 14,000 years. In fact, up until the 19th century, there had been little need for direct intervention at all. A miracle here, a prophet there. When he took her godhead, it hadn't really felt like a demotion, but a transition. The people wouldn't call her Athena or Minerva or Seashat. She would be Uriel, the angel of wisdom. But nothing would really change. There were statues of Uriel, and some of the very devout still prayed. Yet, when she was Athena, everyone knew her name, recognized her shield, her helm. When she had become Anna Friday behind her father's back, it had felt like a betrayal. Still, as she walked the world again, whispering into the ears of scientists, engineers, and mechanics, she didn't regret it. This was what she was born for. As she scrolled, another post caught her eye.
Check out this dope coat.
Hashtag gold boy. Attached was a picture of a man running, his golden coat flapping behind him. It was blurry and clearly taken from a distance, but there was no mistaking it. Adam. The last time they had met, he was sailing around the very sea she looked upon now, still searching for his wife. She had begged her parents to release Eve, just as she had begged for the release of Prometheus. But even then, his lordy opinion of himself had begun to manifest. He was already calling himself King of the Gods. But Eve would be freed soon. Her mother had promised. Adam only had to wait a little while longer. She was sure of it.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 17. Written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All the details are available on our Twitter account at evergreenbook1. The next chapter comes out on January the 31st. Thanks for listening.